Hey, everybody. Welcome to Hino's Home Show. As you may have guessed, my name is Hino. This here is my show, where every week we talk about your biggest investment, your home, and everything surrounding your home. And this week, we're doing a little something different. We're doing a little bit of a credit special this week because credit is something that's everybody's on everybody's mind, and it's certainly a big part of any mortgage transaction or any house buying transaction. But first, let me say that we are brought to you by our good friends over at Accurate Mortgage Group. They're a great mortgage company. Steve and I are both affiliated with them. They'll get you closed and back to life. You can find them at accuratemtg.com. Joining me in the studio today is Mr. Steve Kenny, mortgage processor extraordinaire, my cohort in crime here. And like I said, we're doing a credit special this week. We're going to talk about how credit works and how to improve it if you're having problems with it and how to have a better credit life. And helping us do that is Mr. Eric Wimsatt. He's the director of sales for CIC Credit. We do a lot of work with him, and he's a great guy, really knows his stuff. Eric, welcome to Hino's Home Show.
Thank you, Hino. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. And Steve, welcome to Hino's Home Show.
Thanks, Hino. Oh, it's good to be back.
I'm so glad you came back. I haven't run him off just yet. So.
Not yet.
So everybody knows, Eric, that there's, you know, the three big agencies. You've got your Equifax, you got your TransUnion, and Experian.
Yes, sir.
So how does that differ from what you guys do? You're different from what they do. What do you do?
Well, we are a local credit reporting agency here in Goodlettsville, Tennessee, and we are contracted through all three bureaus to get the data for our customers and put that into basically a blended tri-merge for mortgage companies, banks, lenders, auto dealers.
Just so I can point this out, tri-merge, yes, is kind of the fancy industry word for all three credit bureaus put into one report.
That is correct. Okay. Yes, sir.
So when somebody like us wants to pull somebody's credit and review their credit, we do it through your system.
That is correct.
We can't call up TransUnion and Equifax and Experian directly. We do it through an intermediary, which is you.
That is correct. Now, we are a business-to-business credit reporting agency, which basically means we have to send this data to companies like yourself,
right,
mortgage companies, lenders, banks. We don't have the ability to sell that directly to the consumer, which means you can't walk in the street, knock on our door,
and say, hey, I want my credit.
That is correct. We can't do that.
Okay. So why do you think it is that the system was set up that intermediaries are needed rather than us going directly to one of the three or all three of the credit bureaus?
I think a lot of it really has to do with technology, in that we have the ability to merge that data into one specific credit report that's easily readable, that's compatible with all the systems that you need to use, whether that's a loan origination software or automated system. So I think a lot of it has to do with technology.
Okay.
That we have to have that where we can blend it all together.
Okay. We did say that there are the three different companies. So what's the difference between them?
They are all three independent. So Experian, TransUnion, Equifax, of course, are all independent of each other. So they do not talk to each other, so to speak, in that they all have different guidelines and policies and procedures. So creditors will contract out with those particular bureaus, mm-hmm, and they will send them their data. So some creditors don't report to all three.
Okay.
Some report to one, some report to two.
Okay.
So that's why a lot of times credit scores are different, and that's why in the mortgage industry, you're taking the middle of the three to get,
okay,
trade line or get loans approved.
So credit card X might only report to one or two or all three.
That is correct. Yes, sir.
Why is that? Does it cost them money to do it?
Yes, it does.
Aha.
That's it.
It always comes down to money.
That's it. Yes, sir.
Okay.
And there's monthly minimums, like, tote to note lots typically don't report their data to the bureaus because they don't meet the monthly minimums. So they have monthly minimums that they require in order for them to establish an account.
I see.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
So when did this whole concept of credit scores begin?
Well, as far as back that I can remember would probably be the 1900s from what we gather.
You remember that far back?
Well, from what I've read.
Okay.
I feel that old sometimes.
Yeah, I'm right there with you.
Well, yeah, your company was founded when?
1921.
Okay, so you guys have been around a while.
We've been around a while, and I feel like I've been there that long sometimes.
Wow, okay. So one of the common questions that comes up for us all the time is, why they get a different credit score. You know, they'll see something like a Credit Karma, or everybody gets a credit score with their credit card statement or that kind of thing. And then we'll look at their credit and it'll be a completely different score. And they'll be like, wait a minute, I just looked at Credit Karma this morning and it said I had this and you're telling me I got that. Why is that?
There is a multitude of credit scores that are in the industry.
Okay.
One of them is obviously FICO, which is the ones that you guys use. The direct consumer that gets the credit reports from Credit Karma and other outlets like that, they use a credit score called Vantage. Consumer Index Score is what they also call it.
Okay.
It's a completely different algorithm. It's a completely different way of calculating the score. So it's two different scores. Now, there's no set way to say if my Vantage score is a 700 that my FICO is going to be a 620, right? There's no calculation.
It's not a perfect.
Correct.
Yeah.
There's no perfect way to say this is what it's going to be, but they're completely different. Whether they calculated different, the pie charts that say 30%, 20%, whatever the case may be, they're completely different. So that's why the customers get those, and then you get the FICOs, and they're different.
But why would they want the customers to have different information than the businesses do? Is that on purpose?
I don't know the answer to that. That's a good question. Only because I think that the FICO is probably not going to want the consumer to have it up front initially. So Vantage is kind of a competitor of FICO.
I see.
So they're all, just to kind of paraphrase what you were saying for our listeners. So all of these different companies and all of these different scoring models, they all may be using either the same or similar data. It's just how they interpret that data to come up with a score is different. Right?
That is correct. Yes, sir. Okay. That is correct.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yes.
So then what are the different levels of credit score and what do they mean? You know, what is a bad credit score? What's good? What's pretty good? And what's excellent?
They range from 300 to 850. So obviously 850 is really good. We've seen that.
Statistically, can anybody have an 850?
Yes, we have seen some in the 09 score model. Now, as far as a score model that you guys use for the mortgage industry, I've not seen one. Okay. That doesn't mean they're out there. I'm sure they are, but I've never seen one. The average, from what I read, the average credit score is a 695 nationally.
Okay,
so that seems to be in the good range.
Yeah.
And the ones above that are excellent, and then ones below are probably not as good.
Okay, what's the highest tier? Is it like 740 and above?
Yes.
So anything, so rather, whether you got a 741 or an 850, you're treated the same.
From all indications in terms of the mortgage industry anyway, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and I would say specifically for mortgage purposes, if you're doing, you know, a conventional loan or a government loan, typically it's going to be 740 and above. Everybody's going to be kind of put into that same bracket is usually what we refer to it as. Whereas with a jumbo mortgage, that's where it can make a little bit difference if you have a 760 or a 780. But once you get over 780, there's really not much of a difference for jumbo mortgages either. So most products, you're going to 740 and above is good. But once you get into those really big, you know, several hundred thousand dollar mortgages in the jumbo territory, you may see a little bit difference by having a little bit higher score.
Okay.
And I think a lot of it has to do with bragging rights.
Yeah,
bragging rights.
Bragging rights. You know, I got 800.
You
know,
and I've seen that a couple times when you review credit on a married couple, and you know one of them has a higher score than the other. They're like, aha,
gotcha.
I am better than you. So if you've got a bunch of derogatories as they're called on your credit report, things that aren't good, like late payments and that kind of thing, what hurts your most of the different types, because there's different types of credit lines. There's installment loans, there's revolving credit, which is like a credit card, mortgage, obviously there's medical stuff. Are any of those worse than others to be late on?
No, a late is a late. And I know that we get a lot of those questions coming through as far as what can I do to make sure that my credit score is as good as it can be, right? The big deal when it comes to credit is obviously paying on time.
Yeah.
That's a big deal. As soon as you get a late payment, usually if you have a credit report that is, let's say, stellar in terms of no late payments, good pay history, good trade lines, and balance to limit, usually a 30-day late can affect the score by about 100 points.
Wow.
And I've seen that happen quite a bit.
Just one late payment.
One late payment. And we've seen that happen quite a bit.
Wow.
Yes. So that is a big, big deal.
Does it matter how late? I mean, 31 days versus 40 days?
No, I don't think that is the case. Now, in our history, we don't get days in terms of when we know the creditor reports. Mm-hmm. We get the month. So we'll get December or January type thing as opposed to December 22nd versus January 3rd.
Okay.
So we don't get specific days when it comes to that historically. Yeah.
And it's typically always about a month behind, right? So, yes. I mean, that's something I hear a lot is like, oh, you said my balance on this is, you know, $1,000. And no, it's only $900 because I made a payment this month.
Right.
But that's because they made the payment this month and it won't show up on their credit report till next month.
Correct. That Got is it. Correct.
Okay.
Yes, that is correct. Yeah.
And actually, I have a question for you on that too. So a lot of times we can match up somebody's previous monthly statement to what shows on their credit report. Like we were saying, it's 30 days behind. So when these companies are reporting, are they sending a copy of the bill to the consumer and then also sending a copy to the credit bureaus? And that's just how they report it?
They report it. It's a software that you have to purchase, that the creditor has to purchase, and they're sending over basically raw data.
Okay.
And they'll send over all the trade line history, payment history, balance, all that. And it comes through what they call MSMO format. It's kind of a format that people use in the industry that it's all raw data. So they're not really sending over a bill, so to speak. And they call it a ticket. That's what they call it. They run a ticket every month. So
cool. Interesting.
Interesting. All right. Yeah, we're going to take a little break, but we're going to come back with a whole lot more credit talk on our credit special here on Hino's Home Show. We're going to talk a little bit about how to improve your credit. If you have run into problems and you got some stuff on there you'd like to improve, we're gonna talk about some ways to do that. So come on back here to Hino's Home Show. Welcome back to Hino's Home Show. I'm Hino. I'm here with Mr. Steve Kenny, mortgage pro extraordinaire, and Mr. Eric Wimsatt of CIC Credit. And we are talking credit. This is our credit special we're doing this week. I think this segment, why don't we go ahead and talk about what things people can do to improve their credit if they happen to... Everybody runs into a little trouble sometimes, right? And so what are some of the things that you can do to make things better? By the way, before I forget to say, we are brought to you by our good friends over at the Accurate Mortgage Group. They'll get you closed and back to life. You can find them at accuratemtg.com. So one of the things that confuses a lot of people, Eric, I think, is the concept of paying off their credit cards. A lot of people think, oh, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to pay off all my credit cards, and that's really going to help my credit score. But that's not always the case, right? I mean, paying it completely off to zero.
Correct.
Why is that, and what should they do instead?
One of the misconceptions is when people pay off a credit card, they typically try to close it.
Okay.
And that is a big piece of the puzzle when it comes to factoring in a credit score is length of credit history. So there's times when if you have a credit card that's been open for 10 years and mm-hmm. you decide to close it, the next oldest account may be 3 years.
Okay.
So now your credit history shrunk from 10 years to now three. And that is a piece of the puzzle that is in the equation of your FICO score. So we advise people, if you're going to pay off a credit card, do not close it. Just keep it open. That way the pay history is still there.
Now, one of the things I've heard is that it's advantageous to just keep a little bit on there. Rather than paying it to zero, maybe keep $5 on there or something, just so that you're using a small amount of your available credit.
Yes.
Does that help you? Does that help your score?
Typically it does. We see, we have a product that we offer to you guys along with all of our other mortgage companies that allow you to simulate certain scenarios.
Yep.
In which you can see what a credit score may go to in the event that something gets paid off, deleted, balances change, mm-hmm. Histories change, whatever. And that being said, typically we see that with a credit card balance of being minute as opposed to zero, we do see some good score improvements over the years.
Because I guess what does it just show that you're being responsible with your
correct.
Available credit?
Right.
Rather than just not using it.
Just not using it, correct.
Okay.
It's kind of like exercise, right? You know, you exercise your body, you stay in shape, you get, good results from that. Credit's very similar to that. In that I think if you exercise it and you exercise it correctly, you're going to get good results, which means good credit scores, good pay histories, good balance to high limits, different types of credit, whether it's installment, revolving, mortgages, things of that nature. It's good to have a good mix of that.
It was weird. It was kind of like you started speaking Chinese there for a second. I think you said exercise.
I did what say exercise.
Is that exactly? I'm not even sure what the heck you're talking about. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I got you. I'm in the same boat.
Yeah, okay.
You know, you mentioned pay history being one of those important things when it comes to credit. Certain things are more important than others. So pay history, I think, is the most important one, right?
Yes.
And then after that, it's like available credit and some other things, right?
Correct.
So do you know how that breaks down exactly? Is there like a certain model or percentage?
Yes. Now, I don't know them off the top of my head, but there is a pie chart out there for the FICO scores that will tell you 35% is pay history, 30% may be utilization. And then there's inquiries is a small percent. There's other different percentages.
What's utilization?
Where if you have a $5,000 limit and your balance is $500.
Okay, so you're using 10% of your available credit.
As opposed to $5,000 limit, $5,000 balance.
Right. That's bad.
Maxed out. That is.
Is that equally as bad as a zero balance?
No, I think the $5,000 max out is worse than
is much
zero.
Worse. Yeah. Okay.
Because now you're at a higher risk because now you're showing that perhaps you're maxed out and there may be opportunities that you want to do, open up other credit cards and just get further in debt.
Gotcha. One of the questions that comes up a lot is people wanting to go out and use one of these outside services to quote unquote repair their credit. I typically tell people that's not a good idea just because I have my reasons. But if you were to talk to that person and they said, hey, I'm thinking of going to, you know, XYZ credit repair company, they're only going to charge me $500 and they promise that they're going to make everything better. What would you say to that person?
In our industry, that's part of the equation that we can't deal with. Credit repair companies are things that we can't endorse or push.
Right.
There's a Fair Credit Reporting Act that allows us the opportunity to dispute a trade line for all of our customers for free.
Right.
So we are bound to have to do that.
Sure.
And I think a lot of credit repair companies out there may do some things that that they dispute everything, and that floods the market with the bureaus, and things get pushed behind. So we really can't push the opportunity for people to go use credit repair companies.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head there. You said that they'll go in there and they'll just dispute everything on somebody's credit report, whether it's true or not. And a lot of times that can actually hurt somebody's credit. So this company that they went and paid all this money to quote unquote fix their credit is actually making it worse.
There's a lot of things that can come out of that. And I can't speak for every credit reporting repair company out there because I'm sure there are some that are out there doing the right thing and doing it correctly.
Okay.
There are some that may not. I'm sure you can say that in every industry, right?
Mm-hmm.
But historically, from what we've gathered over the years, is that they will dispute a lot of trade lines. They'll flood the bureaus with a lot of information in which they have to catch up and validate all of those disputes.
It creates a lot of extra work for them. That's sure. Yeah.
It sure does. So,
especially if it's correct information in the first place, they're basically doing a bunch of work for nothing.
And then it's going to come back in on the credit report eventually.
Yeah. Okay.
So there's really not a repair in terms of if it's theirs anyway, it's going to come back.
Okay.
Speaking to that specifically, when it comes to disputes, if you've got disputes on your credit, it pulls whatever that information is out of the way it calculates your FICO model, right?
Correct.
Okay.
So what you're saying just in English then is that you've got your credit score is based on the stuff that's on your credit report. They take that one out. So it's not counting towards your credit score at that moment because it's being disputed.
Right. It's under investigation.
Then what happens?
So then once it comes back on or once the dispute is resolved, I think is the term that everybody uses, that information, what the new information is, will show back up on your credit. It goes back. So if you've got something negative on your credit report and it's legit, that's actually what happened, then that's going to stay in your credit. It's just going to come back. So it may be gone for a short period of time, but it's going to come back. And then as far as a mortgage is concerned, different types of loans have different requirements, but you may actually have to get those disputes removed in order for us to re-pull your credit so that we have a fair assessment of what your credit and FICO score is.
Actually is, yes. Because if you dispute everything, it's going to look like everything's amazing, but it's really not.
Right.
Yeah, right. Okay. It's like makeup. It's like makeup for your credit. A dispute.
Yeah.
New by Polo. It's credit makeup. Interesting. All right. Well, how about bankruptcies and foreclosures? I mean, obviously, that's something that comes across our desk a lot, you know, because lately there seem to be a lot of people doing bankruptcies and foreclosure. That's an unfortunate part of some people's home buying experience. How do they affect your credit exactly? And what is it that people can do if they find themselves in that situation to minimize the bad effects?
You know, that's funny. I've had that question asked over the years, and probably the best analogy that I've ever heard in 15 years at CIC is bankruptcies and
foreclosures
are like getting hit by a train or a bus. So okay. In the event that it really does damage your credit by a considerable amount. And my guess is that typically folks can't avoid those. Otherwise, they wouldn't be in that situation to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
But what we've told people after that is time, right?
Okay.
Time is going to heal those wounds, just like anything else. You have to have time to establish better credit to overcome the bad things.
Okay.
So typically you're going to get 100+ point hit, typically.
Right when that happens.
Right when that happens. And okay. At that point, it's just going to take time for you to develop a pay history over time that okay. will be positive.
Now, does that credit hit happen right when the bankruptcy is filed or when it's discharged? Because sometimes that can be a couple years later.
Well, what we've typically seen is there's already late payments to begin with.
That caused the bankruptcy.
Correct.
Okay.
So it's already in bad shape before the bankruptcy or the foreclosure.
Okay. And so then when the bankruptcy actually happens, it goes another.
Yeah, you're tanking again, and then you're having to.
And now you're having to climb out of that.
Correct.
And is it foreclosure versus bankruptcy? Is that pretty much the same?
Pretty much the same.
It's either a bus or a train.
Yeah, bus or train.
It's either a bus or a train. And if, heaven forbid, it's both, then, they backed up and ran over you.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Well,
so,
yeah. And if for our listeners out there, if for some reason you do end up going through this, which hopefully nobody does, once you do one of those two things, make sure that you take care of your credit after that. Because if you go through a bankruptcy and you come out and you start to reestablish your credit and you start having late payments again, that's going to hurt you even more. So once you go through that, make sure that you are taking steps to take care of it going forward.
Okay. Now, what about if you make a settlement with a creditor? Let's say I've got a creditor that I owe $1,000 to, and I just can't pay it, but I call them up, and they agree to take $300 instead. And so we come to that agreement, I pay them the $300, and it goes away. Does that show up on your credit? Does that hurt your credit? And how does that affect things if you make a settlement for a lesser amount?
That is the that's a million-dollar question that, unfortunately, the answers are not so set in stone.
Okay.
In that we see that a lot come up. In our industry, we have to do a lot of work for a credit report for our customers, whether that means we're validating things with customers and creditors and things like that. We see a lot of those that are settled for less than full amount where it's not reporting. They won't report that. They'll take the less than full amount and they'll still report the initial balance.
Okay.
So we see that quite a bit come up. And I can't tell you the effect that would be different if it was settled for less than full amount versus paid in full.
You mean they show, when they show the previous full amount, they don't show it as being paid off anymore?
We see that yes, that happens quite
wow.
a bit. So the balance will be 1,000, then they'll go in and you'll settle for 300.
Yeah.
You'll pay it. They won't update that. We see that happen a lot.
What if they get something in writing ahead of time? Does that matter? Is that something advisable?
Yeah, that's probably a really good idea. I would do that every single time. That way you have proof of it in the event that there's something we need to do to validate for your customers.
Right, just because sometimes some creditors, credit card companies in particular, and you can ask Mr. Ramsey right up the street here, that they'll say anything to get some money out of you. Oh, and they'll promise anything. But unless you get it in writing, it's not real.
Correct. Yeah, we have to have a lot of written authorizations and things to validate.
All sure. right. Well, you won't need a written authorization to join us after this break. So definitely come on back to Hino's Home Show. We're going to be covering some of your listener credit questions. We've got a whole bunch of them in the mailbag this week. So come on back to Hino's Home Show. Welcome back to Hino's Home Show. I'm Hino. I'm here with Steve Kenny, mortgage pro extraordinaire. And this week, joining us in the Accurate Mortgage Group studio is Mr. Eric Wimsatt of CIC Credit. And we're talking credit this week. Before I get too far, let me just make sure I say that we are brought to you by our good friends over at Accurate Mortgage Group. They'll get you closed and back to life. Check them out at accuratemtg.com if you're looking to buy or refinance a home. We'd love to help you out. So we've got some, we've got a whole bunch of listener questions in the listener mailbag this week. By the way, you can go to heinoshomeshow.com, ask your questions there. We'd love to hear from you. So, Steve, what do we got in the mailbag?
All right. So first question is from Paul in Lebanon. Is my payment reported to credit as 30 days late if I pay on the 31st? So on those months where you have 31 days, mm-hmm. is it late if you pay on the 31st?
That's a great question. And in fact, I'm not going to have the answer for that right okay. now, only because these creditors are all different, right? Every creditor has
So it kind of depends on who you're paying.
That has a lot to do with it. Absolutely. So a lot of these creditors are going to report monthly. Sometimes they may report every 2 months. Sometimes, typically, they're all going to report within the month, right? Mm.
But is it the calendar month or is it 30 days? Is that a hard and fast
there's
30
no,
days?
There's I don't know the answer to that. To be 100% honest with you, I do not know. My guess would be, if I was a guessing man, that it would be late after 30 days.
Okay, Paul, there yeah. you go. Make your payment by the 30th.
Yep, make your payment by the 30th.
Yeah. And okay. if it's February, I'd probably pay it on the 28th.
Yeah, yes, that sure. might be a good idea. Exactly. Or this year, maybe the 29th.
Correct.
But, yes. Yeah, okay. All right, what else we got there, Steve?
All right, so next question is Lisa in Nolensville. I've heard that it is better to leave old collections and charge-offs alone because a payment to them could actually lower your credit. Is that true and why?
We do see that a lot. We try to advise people that in the event that that does come up and mm-hmm. you can pay them after your closing, that would be the most beneficial. The reason why the credit score does go down is there's a recent activity. And when that recent activity does come into play, then at that point, the scores will be affected based on that updated trade line history.
So it basically pushes that trade line back to the forefront?
Correct.
Whereas it's kind of hanging out in the background?
Hanging out, not doing much.
So is it safe to say that if you've got a debt that's sitting there and it's been sitting there a long time, it's best to just leave it alone?
Just leave it alone. And at some point, once you get ready to, when you're not in the market of buying and mm-hmm. or purchasing something where yeah. rate's going to be affected, at that point, I think you should take care of your obligations and pay them.
All right.
Does it matter how big or how small, like what the dollar amount is of the collection? So if you have like a $50 collection because you didn't pay a medical bill or something, is that different than if you have like a $5,000 collection?
From what all I've seen over the years, the damage is done regardless of the amount. So if really? It's a bad debt, then it's a bad debt is a bad debt.
Wow.
Interesting.
Okay. And medical?
Medical is a little different.
Well, the reason I bring that up, I was just looking in the mailbag here. And one of the questions was that Mike in Nashville says, medical bills are absolutely killing me. What do I do about these enormous bills that I can't pay?
That's the thing about the medical collections and the score models that you guys are currently using, right, mm-hmm. for the mortgage industry. Medical collections are calculated in the score.
Okay.
So that's something that the newer score models are taking out of consideration. So I think a lot of that 09, 08 score models that people are looking into as far as maybe your Fannies or your Freddies or other industries, they're pushing that or looking into it. Because of these medical collections, because okay. we do see a lot of those, and it does affect scores.
It seems like everybody has them.
We see a lot of those yeah. every single day.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah. I've seen people with like amazing credit, and there's some medical
there's
stuff
some
on
medical
there.
Medical collections, yeah. Where you think your insurance is taking care of it, and you don't know, and you get them in the mail. I mean, we get bills like that at the house all the time. Now, yeah, hoping that they're being paid.
Now, I heard a rumor. I don't know if this is true or not. I just heard this the other day that it's possible to file a bankruptcy just for medical bills.
I would believe it.
Yeah.
I don't see why not.
So it leaves everything else alone, just the medical stuff.
Huh.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Yeah, I don't know either. I was hoping you knew.
I've never heard of that before.
Okay, we've all stumped ourselves.
Yeah,
all
there
right.
we go. There we go.
How about we get the next listener question there, Steve?
All right. Well, actually, you know what? Before I go to the next one, yeah. I want to say a couple things about how we in the mortgage business treat medical collections yep. and collections in general. So when it comes to medical collections, they are still going to affect your score, like Eric was saying. But for the purposes of some different calculations that we do, medical is actually not counted. And I think the reason for that is just like he was saying earlier, you know, pretty much everybody has medical collections, or at least a lot of people do. Mm-hmm. So knowing that that's really an issue with the way insurance billing works, the mortgage industry has basically said, okay, if you have these medical collections, it's going to hit your score. We'll hit you there, but we're not going to, you know, make you deal with medical collections otherwise.
Right.
Now, if it's a collection for, you know, let's say a past past due installment loan or like a credit card that goes in a collection. Those, once you're above a certain amount, so if your balances are higher, we're probably going to take that, do a calculation, and add that to your debt to income ratio because you're a little bit higher risk. So an example of that is if you're going to do an FHA mortgage and you've got more than $2,000 in cumulative balance, so let's say you had $3,000, we're going to take and add all of those collections up. It's not just individual collections.
Right. It's all of them put together.
We're going to take that amount and we're going to hit your debt to income ratio at 5% of whatever that balance is.
Wow.
So if you owe $3,000 in collections, we're going to add $150 a month to your total debt. Now you may not
As if it was the payment.
As if it were a payment being made. That's correct.
Right. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, what do we got in the mailbag next? I think we got something from Buddy.
Yeah, Buddy. Okay, so Buddy in Hendersonville wants to know, why can't I pull my own credit score? Isn't it my information?
The credit scores that you guys have access to as far as a direct consumer were the ones that we talked about earlier, the Vantage scores. Mm-hmm. Those are a direct consumer credit reporting score that is developed by Vantage. Mm-hmm. So those are the scores those guys have readily available that they can get.
Okay.
Annual credit report is the one you get to get free, annualcreditreport.com.
Yep.
That's where they can get their free credit report every year.
That gives you your credit report, but it does not give you a score.
That's correct.
It just shows you what's on your credit report.
Yes.
Okay.
And then some of your Credit Karmas and other systems that
Credit
are out
Sesame,
there.
Credit Sesame, things like that.
They're going to give you those Vantage scores typically, mm-hmm. which is going to be what we talked about earlier. They're a little bit different than the FICOs that you guys use.
Okay. Gotcha.
Interesting. Yeah. Now, is that so with the like freecreditreport.com and Credit Karma and stuff like that, mm-hmm. is it bad to keep pulling your credit?
No. Now, that's a good question. There's a hard inquiry and a soft inquiry. Those are types of inquiries that you have when you have your credit report pulled.
Okay.
Hard inquiries are ones that you are applying for credit.
Okay.
Whether that means a mortgage, automobile, insurance, whatever, you're applying for a credit. Soft inquiries are not, whether that's a pre-qualification or
you're getting a cell phone or something.
Yeah. Or your annual credit report. When they pull that for you, that's a soft inquiry and that does not affect your scores.
All right. So next question is Jack in Nashville. I pay cash for just about everything and I have no debt. I'm very responsible with my money. So why do I not have a credit score?
Mm.
The bureaus, of course, they calculate your score when they pull the report. So in order for that to do that, they have to have trade lines. They have to have payment history. And in order for that payment history to be there on the report, that's where the score is generated from. We have had that question over the years. You guys will probably be much more qualified to answer this, but do you qualify for a better rate with a person with an 800 score versus one that doesn't have a score at all?
Mm-hmm.
That pays in cash for everything. I don't know the answer to that question. You guys will be better at that, but yet credit's like your vehicle. You know, you have to maintain it. You have to upkeep it. Once you do that, you're going to reap the benefits of a good vehicle where it's, you know, changing the oil, put the gas in it, rotating tires. Credit's no different. You have to have good balances, good pay histories, lengthy pay histories, and those scores will reflect that.
You got to have batter in the bowl to make a pancake.
That's it, batter in the bowl.
Thank you.
In the bowl. Yes, sir.
Just thought of that.
Good one.
Can you tell I made pancakes recently?
Batter in the bowl.
Okay. Well, we got a letter from, or email, I should say, from Carrie in Hermitage. She says, I've got so many credit problems. How do I prioritize what to pay as it relates to credit? Like, is it better to have one late and three on time or four late or two late and two on time? How do I prioritize going about, you know, improving things?
Well, the first thing would be, you know, you want to check your balances, right? So you're going to have to try to knock down your balances to get under a certain limit. That's always a good thing to look into. Pay histories are pay histories, right? If you've already been late, you can't take it back.
Right.
So the essence of time will help you a lot. So what that means is over the course of time, paying on time, doing the right thing will develop better scores over time. You know, it doesn't take super long to get in trouble. It just takes you a lot longer to get out of it.
All right.
Credit's no different.
Cool. Well, I got time for one more question. What do we got left there?
All right. So Lisa in Spring Hill says, I want to buy a home, but I'm terrified of getting my credit checked. Won't that lower my score?
The mortgage industry, in fact, I'd say the all industries, but mortgage industry in particular, you have a certain window where it only shows as one inquiry.
Okay.
So you have 30, anywhere from 15 to 45 days, depending on the bureau. But on average, you're going to say 30 days is one inquiry. your credit score is not affected until 30 days after that inquiry is pulled.
So, and that's specifically for a mortgage?
Correct.
Okay. So, yes. Yeah. Applying for a credit or for a credit card or a car loan, that's going to be a whole other ball game.
Correct.
And that'll actually might hurt you a little bit more. Well, that's been very informative. Yes. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Well, we got one more segment left with the guru of credit here, yeah. Eric Wimsatt of CIC Credit. We're going to be back here on Hino's Home Show in just a few minutes. All right, welcome back to Hino's Home Show. I'm Hino. I'm here with Mr. Eric Wimsatt of CIC Credit, and of course, my cohort here, Steve Kenny.
Hello, Hino.
Hey, hey, hey. So we're going to talk this segment a little bit about building your credit from scratch. Let's say you're starting out, you're fresh out of college, or you're maybe even fresh out of high school. You know, you're getting started in life. You don't have any credit. Some good ways to get started with that. You know, what are some good ways to start establishing good credit or any credit?
Any credit, yes. We've told folks that they can go out and get a secured credit card. They can also get their own credit card, naturally. We advise them, or I've told those folks, to make sure that all three bureaus are getting the data.
That's okay.
Kind of an important piece
and
of the puzzle.
How do they do that?
When they call the creditor and they ask if they're going to open up a credit card with Cap One or whatever bank that they bank with, whenever they get those cards, they just ask them, do you report to all three bureaus? Because you want all three bureaus to get that data.
Okay.
So I had heard of a plan, if you want to hear this.
I would love to hear of a
yes.
plan. Let's hear
now,
it.
Now, this is what we went to a convention years ago. I cannot remember the name of the movie. It was a Leonardo DiCaprio movie where Catch Me If You Can.
Catch Me If You Can, yeah.
The gentleman.
I just saw that recently again, yeah.
The gentleman was speaking, the main guy that it was about.
Frank Abagnale.
Is that his name?
There you go.
There you go.
That was his name.
Yeah. Oh, fantastic. Well, what he had done in order to establish credit for his children as they started out in college is he got them a credit card, right?
Mm-hmm.
Made them an authorized user. He controlled the balance. He controlled the payment. And he controlled the limit. The kids were on the card for 4 or 5 years, and when those kids got out of school, he handed it to them. They got it in their name, and then boom, they had established credit. It was a great idea, fantastic idea. In fact, I think
so. He did a separate card for each kid.
Correct.
That was him and the kid.
Yes, that's what he did.
Okay.
And he made the kid as an authorized user all through school. He could track their payments, see where they're going, see what bars they're at, see what restaurants they're eating at, how much they're using in gas.
A little bit of a side benefit there.
A little
there,
bit
yeah.
side benefit, yes. And at that point, like I said, at the end of that 4 or 5 years when they were through the school, he handed that card to them. They applied, and then they got it out of the father's name, main account. They had good credit scores with a credit card to start.
Okay.
I just thought it was a good idea. I heard that probably 5 years ago.
That is a good idea.
Yeah. And I mean, for those who have kids that are going into school and maybe moving on to college and things, I think that's something that could help your kid get a savage credit.
So what if you don't have a great dad like
right,
that?
Right, right, right.
And you're on your own.
You're on your own.
And you're like, okay, what do I do?
That's it. Go out and start establishing credit by opening up credit cards.
Do you have to do a bunch, or is one good enough?
One's good enough. Your credit score will start establishing after 6 months of reporting. So you'll have about 6 months worth of nothing in terms of no credit score.
So just having the credit card is not good enough. You actually have to use it.
You have to use it, and you have to pay it on time.
But you only have to use it a little bit. It's not like you got to go out and buy a car or something with it. You just buy coffee and then pay it off every
gas,
month. Yeah, and then pay it off.
Pay it off.
Okay, so the amount doesn't matter, charging $100 or $5.
It's going to fluctuate anyway because you got to remember, first 6 months, you're not going to have a credit score.
Okay.
So after that, you're going to start going up and down based on the balance, whether it's maxed out if you happen to do that, or it's down to zero or 50 or whatever, and then you can have another one and another one. And eventually, over time, your scores will develop into something good.
Okay.
Now, I've heard from some people, this is, I mean, going back years and years and years, that when you're first establishing credit, a lot of people like to take out an installment loan, like a personal loan or something like that, for $1,000 and then just pay it back over 12 months or whatever the case is. Would you recommend that over doing a credit card or doing both? Or is there a difference? Like, what's your opinion on that?
You know, we don't have the luxury of seeing someone starting in terms of credit. Because typically
they don't show up on your system yet.
Yeah. You guys are just pulling credit, and we see it, you know, for what it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I can't answer that as far as an installment versus a revolving debt. I would think that both would be better if you could get them both, because, you know, part of the piece of the puzzle is different types of trade lines, different types of credit. So I would imagine that the installment and the revolving would help develop a better picture of a score.
Okay.
So I would say both. If you can do it.
I think it's important to note, too, along with that. So if you get a 12-month installment loan, payment history is obviously a big part of this. So if you take out a 12-month loan and then you pay on it for 12 months, well, then it's over. But if you take out a credit card, you could have that for years and years,
years and years. Yeah.
So what if you take out an installment loan and just pay it back right away? Does that do anything for you? Or is it better to have paid it off over the 12-month term?
I would probably keep it over the 12 months only because your scores are going to establish after 6.
Right, so paying it off back right away, you've accomplished nothing.
You've accomplished nothing.
Yeah. Okay, that makes good sense.
And along with that, too, with the credit card, that's also important because of that utilization that we were talking about earlier.
Yes.
You know, you want to have available credit to you compared to what you're using. That's going to help boost your credit score. So having that credit card is also going to help in that regard, so...
Now, there are, you know, there's a school of thought. There are other radio personalities who talk about not having credit at all. No credit cards, which, you know, is good for some people. So what do you say to those people? Can you build your credit without a credit card?
You can build your credit with other trade lines, yes. I mean, you don't have to have an installment loan
or an auto loan or even a mortgage or something like that.
Those things are good for your credit as well.
But things like cell phone payments, your utility bills, that never reports to credit, right?
They actually do.
They do.
Oh. Now, there are some that will report, yes. There's a new product out called Experian Boost that we see all over the news, that we see on advertisements on the radio.
Oh, tell us about that.
Yeah, Experian Boost is a product that, unfortunately, in your industry, it doesn't affect your credit scores.
Okay.
Right? So the score model that you guys use are not effective.
Okay.
But it does give you the ability to see alternate trade lines in the event that it's like a thin file. So what the customer does, they go to their website, they establish an account, and then they start uploading their data and they start sending it over, and then that trade line will report on Experian.
Okay, so when you say a thin, you mean that there's just not a whole lot of stuff on that credit report.
Correct.
And when you say alternate trade lines, you mean things that are aside from a credit card or a car loan, things that are off the beaten path as far as credit. And that would be things like cell phone.
Utility bills.
Okay.
Cell phone bills, things like that.
Okay, anything that you regularly pay.
Correct. That you can show a pay history that you have made.
Even things like Netflix or something like that, as long as you've been doing it for a while.
Correct.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, you have another side of the business, CIC does, that helps landlords, right?
Correct.
What's that called, and what do you do for that?
We have a online portal called Apply Connect. It is cicredit.com/applyconnect.com.
Apply Connect, okay.
Yes, that's it. And basically what it is you have the ability for landlords, for renters, and for real estate agents to purchase a background check
for
$28.50. So what it'll do is it'll run a nationwide criminal. It'll give them an Experian credit report with an advantage score. It'll run.
So that's the consumer credit score?
Yes.
Okay,
the consumer credit score. And it'll give you a nationwide criminal. It'll give you an eviction, and it'll give you a sex offender registry.
Report. That's important.
Yep, yeah, it's a big deal. Of course, they're all instantaneous. So these guys basically go in, register to get the account. You set it up. At that point, the customer will go in. You can send them a link. Mm-hmm. The link will go to the renter. The renter goes in, pays for it. You get the copy of the report, and then that's it.
Okay.
It's pretty much an online. It's kind of a one-off in that if you don't have a lot of these that you need to run where you need an account, this might be a good alternative.
Okay, because you can just do a few of them a year if you only have a couple of units or something.
Right.
Versus a more elaborate one of these massive apartment complexes. Yeah.
Right. They're going to want an account that they're mowing through people and need these reports a lot.
Yeah.
Whereas if you have a few rentals and you end up getting a 1, 2, 3-year lease, whatever the case may be, you're not going to do a lot of those anyway.
Okay.
But it's just an alternative.
Wow. That's a pretty cool product.
Yeah.
So what would a real estate agent use that for?
I really don't know why they would want to use one, to be honest with you, but I know that we have that portal because I've wondered that myself. Like, why would a real estate agent really want it? But, I mean, really, it says it. Real estate agent
Maybe they want to know. Maybe they want to know before they get in a car with somebody and start driving them around that they're not an axe murderer. You know?
So it's funny you say that, because that's actually what my thought was. You know, if you're depending on what area you're in, you know, if
it hey, let's makes go sense visit a bunch of vacant, empty houses at night. You know, what could go wrong?
Right, right, absolutely. Now, I guess too, like if you've got a real estate agent who's doing leases. You know, I bet that's probably useful for them. So they've got it set up. And if they're working with, you know, individual landlords who maybe own one or two or three properties or whatever the case, and they're only doing it every couple of years, the agent could probably handle that process on their behalf, right?
Or maybe there's some lease purchase option out there that maybe, you know, they're utilizing. Or I really don't know why a real estate agent would want it personally, but I know that, you know, landlords and renters, I think it's very useful.
Would you ever, do you ever have people just want to pull one on themselves just to see what's out there about them?
No.
No.
No, we don't have many people doing that. No.
Okay, well, maybe I'll start a trend. I wonder if they found out about that thing from 20 years ago.
Yeah, and we do have another piece. It's employment background checks as well. So for anybody out there
listening. How is that different? They don't look at rental stuff?
Yeah, well, yeah, the rental stuff is not really as big a deal.
For the employer.
Yeah, the employment's more of a... we're going out and getting felonies and misdemeanors through different counties and address searches and things of that nature. So we have an employment screening division too. That's we do a lot of business in that arena too.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Well, that's great. Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for inviting me.
If people want to go do that, apply connect. So it's CICCredit.com /apply connect.
That's it. And if you have any questions about it, just email me at sales@cicredit.com.
sales@cicredit.com. All right. Well, thank you so much. This has flown by.
It has flown by.
I hope I'm a little bit smarter about credit now. How about you, Steve?
I'm glad you
look smarter. You look smarter, which is great. Hey, join us next week on Hino's Home Show. We're going to have another great show for you. In the meantime, check us out at hinoshomeshow.com and fill out a question. We'd love to hear from you. So see you next week on Hino's Home Show.